The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Sam Stagg, the VP of Engineering at Pusher. Yeah, pressed go, so we should be good to go now. Sounds actually really good. Probably using headphones or something, which is, again, brilliant. Pusher, so all over it on the logistics today. So
massive. Well, we've got this snazzy mic that we use for recording like developer outreach videos and stuff like that. So I borrowed that.
Right. Interesting. What's the developer outreach thing?
So we have a dev evangelist team who kind of cross between marketing and engineering. They're basically like engineers who can talk to other developers around the world and kind of get them excited in our products, stuff like that.
Ah, makes sense. Yeah. You're seeing them a lot more of that actually, aren't you, in the space. Like, I think it's an obvious one, really, isn't it? But I always wonder, like, I think it's an obvious one, but I think from, like, a recruitment perspective, it must be not the easiest thing in the world to recruit for, because surely...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because surely devs want to do dev work, not always want to do marketing stuff. So I'm sure that's... on paper, it probably sounds like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's like travel the world, you know, get to go to conferences all the time, but, you know, work on, like, little side projects, but they... Yeah, most of the time they have to focus on the marketing output rather than the engineering output. And for a lot of people, that's I think people cycle through it. You know, like they might spend a couple of years being a DevRel and then refocus back on development, and then maybe, you know, go back into it after a while. Because that also keeps you fresh as well, which is kind of important. You can't be like DevRel and not up to speed with the trends that are happening. So
yeah, of course. Well, like I said, there's got to be like some sort of itch to get back onto it, I'm sure, at some point. Maybe not too dissimilar to yourself, I'm sure. Yeah, I know these days it's probably nowhere near as much coding and stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely right.
So do you get the itch then to get stuck back in, or, you know?
It's interesting because the thing about it is that, yeah, I mean, I do, and I still do stuff for my own kind of personal entertainment, I suppose. But you realise that the standard that's required to develop really, really great software is something that you can't kind of do as half measures, and being an engineering manager is entirely a job in itself, so very rarely get the chance to do what I'd call real software engineering. But I scratch the itch by just doing my own small projects. I own a couple of our libraries as well, but that's small things. So but definitely that is, like, you still think, oh, I wonder if I could. I mean, well, actually, I know I couldn't cut it anymore. So that's the other part. When I look at when I look at how good the team are and think, yeah, I don't think I'd hire me into this team. So so I'm not going to use my power to impose myself on the team.
Does it get competitive at all, do you think, within the team? Were you quite competitive, if that's the right word to use, when you were hands-on? And do you see any kind of level of competitiveness within your team? And do you think that's healthy, if so?
I think, you know what, the team, I have seen it in engineering teams in the past, but right now, the team we have here are more motivated, they're more competing against themselves and their own knowledge and things like that. So, you know, they want to get better, but they don't necessarily want that to be at the expense of anyone else or by being better than someone else. It's quite fair in that way. But yeah, it's a really interesting question.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I think for some reason, traditional, if you want to call it that, traditional business roles, maybe even things like law, you know, sales, marketing,
you know, these kind of full, you know, commercial roles, I suppose, if you want to call them that. There tends to be this kind of competitiveness, and if you ever listen to anyone lecturing, they love, especially if it's an American, they love to make these kind of sports references, don't they, to everything?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that there's, you know, there's things to be taken from that, even though it's, you know, it's clearly not the same. But, you know, they kind of encourage this kind of competitiveness internally and externally. And certainly in sales, for example, that's part of, I think, the drivers for some people. And I don't know why, but I've always been curious to know whether that would be the same way. And I'm sure it has to be to a certain extent. I mean, there's always got to be egos involved with these things, isn't there? But maybe it's just not kind of verbalized as much in the technical community.
And I don't think people compete as individuals. I think they compete as teams and companies against other, you know, in a dysfunctional, well, maybe not even a large organization rather than dysfunctional. The teams might be competing against each other in some way, you know, who's going to get their library used by the other team or whatever. We're not big enough to see any of that, and I don't think it's necessarily a positive thing. But, you know, there's definitely competition in between companies doing the same kind of thing. So we have competitors, and you know, it can be inspiring to see what they've done and try and beat it. Where that's possible, I think we try and use that as a good motivator, but it's not going to motivate everyone. And engineers sometimes aren't motivated by that level of the same sort of like commercial success, or, you know, they're probably more motivated by like internal elegance of things. And that's hard to tell with your competitors.
Do you think that that's a personality trait that's difficult to manage then? The fact that that's not there, because, you know, like I was saying, those commercial roles, the non-technical commercial roles, it's easier to kind of throw the numbers out there, I suppose, and for people to get bought into it. But obviously now technology and technical roles, they are that much more closely connected to commercial side of the business. And they almost have to, there's, you know, they're now the product, so they have to kind of be more aware. But by the nature, and obviously I'm speaking generally here, people like you, as you were saying, they may not be as turned on by that aspect of the business or that aspect of the work. So I'm sure that adds an element of difficulty from a management perspective in itself.
I mean, it means you can't fall back to just managing people by statistics. But I don't think sales managers and people who do have, you know, numbers based targets, it's not just about doing that anyway, is it? So, you know, there's the fact that we don't necessarily have that. You can't say to an engineer, "Oh, look, Alice produced, you know, 10 more lines of code than you did yesterday, Bob. So you've got to work harder today." It doesn't really work like that. But equally, that wouldn't, just using the numbers wouldn't necessarily work in any environment, I think. So,
But I suppose that, I suppose that it's still important to have that awareness, though, I suppose, but you know, sure, about where they stand. Yeah, and that needs to be, I don't know, it's an interesting one, isn't it, I suppose, now that you kind of put it like that, because, I mean, I guess even sales and marketing people don't, you know, that's not what really essentially motivates you, you know, on a day-to-day basis, which is where the kind of the work is done. Interesting. So, you know, on that point as well, from, you know, the management style, you know, you've obviously kind of, you know, you've progressed through Pusher, from what I understand, and I'm sure you would have had experiences before that. You know, you'll probably have, you know, a particular management philosophy, or at least a consistency in the way that you like to, you know, manage people and lead teams. Where do you feel that you kind of developed your style from? Was there a mentor? Was there just, you know, kind of a whole learning experience? Where, if you were to kind of think about that, what would you kind of look at and think, yeah, that's probably where I kind of developed my style?
It's a good question. I think for me, I've had good managers in the past. I mean, I was a software engineer in the distant past myself, and so I picked things up from the people who'd manage me, hopefully the good things about the people who'd manage me, the things they I thought they did positively, and tried to bring some of that in. I did some more formal training as well in terms of being put onto leadership programs at jobs I've had in the past, and I'm very self-taught in some ways off very widely read in terms of management books and ways of doing things. But then it's, you can't be, but it's the same as everything, you can't be experienced, kind of. You can't, you can't replace the fact of having failed a couple of times to learn, actually, I really shouldn't do that again, and then try for yourself not to learn that. Even if someone tells you, don't do this, or, do it this way, I've learned this works really well in the past. Sometimes you need to have had a few hard landings before you can do it properly, if that makes sense. And, that's probably been the main thing for me. I think in terms of team process, so the way that I like to see teams working, that's something where I have had a few more specific mentors, people who've come in from generally as when people have hired as experienced engineers or as project managers or scrum masters, who've come in and said, look, I like what you're doing here, but where the experiences I've had in the past tell me that you could be doing a lot better, and this is a way we could be doing it. And that's a really powerful thing to have that in a team, I think, mixed with people who also have great ideas themselves and come up with creative stuff individually. And if you can manage across between people who are bringing in kind of deep, hard-won knowledge with people who are creative, then you can learn from them as a team. And I think I've done that as well. It's been a combination of a few mentors, a lot of experience, and hiring the right people, I think.
Yeah, the hiring the right people bit, I mean, I know we spoke a little bit about that last time we spoke, but it's an incredibly difficult challenge now. And I've always tried to build my teams with people who would just have completely different personalities. So I've tried to avoid any clashes. And that's something that I've done my absolute best to do over the time. Rightly or wrongly, some people think that it's healthy to have people competing against you. I try and avoid that. That's personally been my kind of hiring philosophy. But it's definitely easier said than done, because, the whole interviewing process and hiring process, just in its nature, you don't identify the real substance of the individuals I tend to find. And I know that there's certainly an art to trying to figure that out. But I've yet to, I think, interview people, and not that they haven't executed on what they've said they've executed, but from a straight personality perspective, it's never been perfectly consistent from that process to when, they've actually come to work for me. And I've been quite lucky. I think I've always managed to get some pretty good people, but it's such a tough process. And I'm just wondering kind of your experiences, particularly around the hiring process and maybe hiring a pusher, because I think it is an area that maybe there is an element of innovation or doing things differently that really needs to be considered. And hopefully, from my perspective, someone who's got the time will actually, go and have a good think about it, because it is tricky, and I think there is a lot of room for improvement there.
Yeah, I'll take that. When we look at hiring a pusher, I'd like to think we hire a fairly diverse group of personalities and people, but I think the bit that's non-negotiable is you don't want people who are going to be destructive to a team's kind of coherence or internal harmony, which there's that, I don't know if you've read, there's a great survey that Google did, I think, a couple of years ago about psychological safety. And teams, it's not necessarily about the personalities within the teams, but it's about whether the people in the teams are feel safe to raise questions and to, you know, make critiques and make reasonable suggestions about how things could be done better. And the teams that feel safe doing that are the ones that really perform the best. And I think if you can optimize for that, but as you said, it's an art anyway, and an interviewer is never going to be able to pick those people out. And I don't think things like psychometric tests are the approach to take either. You know, there's some stuff you only find by having people in your team and being very hyper-vigilant for negative behaviours that are affecting that kind of ability of the team to function properly.
So have you kind of, you know, speaking of kind of progressing from
yeah,
you know, throughout and the learnings, has there been some particular learnings that you've had through that those experiences, and now, you know, how heavily involved you are still with the hiring process that you're continuing to learn? Is it something that you are sitting down and constantly trying to figure out how to, you know, improve? Or is it something that I suppose is just kind of more ad hoc type thing?
Yeah, I'd like to say we were continually thinking of how to improve it. I think it's the really interesting thing, I think, is that hiring is like in its at the high level, when you've got multiple people, you're hiring multiple people, it is a process and like a system that you can kind of look at inputs and outputs and think, how, where can we do better? And that's, you know, we definitely do that. But then when the rubber hits the road, or whatever the saying is, when, you know, when it actually comes to speaking to one individual person, you have to abandon some of that. You can't be robots and try to fit a real person into this kind of process that you've defined. People are really complex, aren't they? And so much as we do try to continually make these improvements and continually make our hiring process more efficient and better at spotting good candidates earlier, and you know, not wasting our time and candidates' time for roles that aren't suited perfectly for them, the reality is that each person is still an individual in that process, and you have to be able to adapt on the fly to think, oh, actually, you know, the classic situation there is someone who comes in for one role, you speak to them and think, well, you're not actually suited for being this kind of engineer, but actually we have a role in this other team that I reckon you'd be perfectly suited for. Would you like to talk about that? And that's something that does occasionally happen.
Do you kind of recall your experiences as well? I find it, I don't know about you, but, you know, I find it impossible to not kind of look back on my own personal experiences when I was kind of on the other side of the table. You know, it's impossible not to, isn't it? And just think, God, you know, so do you remember that some of those experiences for yourself? And, you know, I actually don't know, if we probably haven't drawn enough context on your background, so it might be a good opportunity for us to do that as well. But sticking to that initially, is there, you know, was there experiences that you had where you recall, you know, just how, you know, nervous and maybe, you know, how you would
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think the interview processes and kind of candidate experiences that I remember positively, the ones where I was treated like a person, and it felt like the process had been tailored for my own strengths to some extent. But, you know, also, and that includes ones where I didn't get the job, of course, but the ones that I find quite difficult, and this is maybe just my own personality, but the interview process I find quite difficult are the ones where it's, you know, you're not even in a conversation with the person who's interviewing you. They have a set of six questions and they're going to ask you those six questions, and that's the entirety of your interview. You know, you sit down, they ask you six questions, and then they say thanks for coming in, and then maybe the only chance you get to actually talk to them and understand a bit about the culture of the organization is like in the lift on the way down and they're showing you to the door. And I think I understand why some organizations have to follow those kind, or at least believe they have to follow those kind of processes in order to try and eliminate introducing bias and interviewers' personal preference into the process. But I think you can still have an unbiased and honest interview process that still has some humanity in it. And I think that's our goal here at Pusher. We'd like the candidate experience to feel like that. Like, well, okay, even if you didn't get the job, you still got treated like a person, not a, you know, candidate 473 through the door. And that, you know, we have an advantage in that because we're a small company, or fairly small. But you know, I hope that as we grow, and we're certainly really ramping up the hiring at the moment, as we grow, we want to keep that kind of experience where you feel like you've been valued as a person for giving your time up to come in as an interviewee.
Definitely. I think it's a great attitude to have. Refreshing, and it shouldn't be, but it is, right? I don't know why that is. It's interesting as well, you know, we have, you know, a lot of people who I speak to on the podcast about this, and I say a lot, actually, not had actually that many people discuss this on the show. I think that's the first time I've actually heard that. It's always been very, you know, very kind of operationally driven as the process goes, and the human element tends to be forgotten. I wonder whether that's just because working with technology is easy for us to forget that there's people involved at times. I don't know.
Yeah, oh, completely. But the process is important as well, and you know, you want it to feel smooth and efficient too. So yeah, it's not that like you've got to get that. I think you've got to get that balance right between not like pulling someone from pillar to post, showing them too many different kind of experiences and too many different kind of people, and not really understanding what their role is going to be about, and thinking, where am I in the process? Am I near the end, or you know, how many more people do I have to speak to? So we try to be very clear about our expectations for what candidates are going to go through. And the really big advantage, at least for interviewing engineers, is that you can have a technical test element. I mean, everyone expects the coding interview, but as isn't really a coding interview, it's a problem solving exercise. Yeah, but people expect that as part of the interview process and as part of the engineering hiring process. So you build the whole thing around that, and you say, well, how can we make this process, which, yeah, it's about getting people from one end to the other, filtering out the right people. But how can, through that, we make people feel like they're valued as an individual?
Agreed. Really great perspective, definitely. You know, I want to talk a little bit about your kind of experiences now and like sure. Where we're up to at the moment. So, you know, obviously VP of Engineer at Pusher, you know, what's the kind of journey been like so far for your time at Pusher? And, you know, VP of Engineering, there's a lot of people, I suppose, who have a similar job title, and from my experiences, the job always entails slightly different things depending on where you work. Yeah. So, you know, what's your kind of main focus, you know, in the role, and has that kind of been a progressive role in itself since you've been at Pusher?
Yeah, so I joined 3 years ago when we were a very different company. We had about, I don't know, less than 20 people, certainly. We're now pushing 70, and the engineering team's grown from 5-6 people to around 30 now. And so throughout that, my role really has been about kind of, well, hopefully successfully, but making that growth work for Pusher as a company. So I don't really have much. Some VPs of engineering have a fair amount of technical responsibility. I have a more limited input into technical strategy and things like that. Our CTO, Pavel, he's primarily responsible for that. And also, because we're a company who build tools for developers, so you know, our APIs are used by engineers primarily. They're our main customers. And so the whole company has to think like a CTO in a lot of ways. You know, we're our technical strategy is our product strategy to some extent, and everyone from the CEO down needs to have some kind of technical awareness. And that certainly means that, yeah, in a maybe less technical or less engineering focused organization, the VP of engineering would also be responsible for entirely setting the technical strategy. That's definitely not the case for us. And equally as well, we like, you know, one of the things I like to try and foster in the team is a sense of autonomy and people being able to make their own choices about technology and how they do things and the way they do it. And so my job is really about building people, adding people into the team, growing the capabilities of the team, whether that's through hiring people with different skills or skilling up the people we have. And then facilitating or making it possible for them to do the best work of their careers, like, you know, make it easy for them to do great work. And if I've done that, and if they do that great work, I mean, I can't really take credit for the work they do, but hopefully I can take credit for the environment in which they do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, when you kind of started off your journey that you would have, or maybe you did, maybe I'm wrong, but you would have expected the role that you're working in now to have been the reality. I suppose a lot of engineers don't expect it to be that way.
No, when you start, you think your first job, you think, well, what happens is that you do a bit of work as an engineer, then you get really, really clever, and then you can write better and better code, and then you're writing amazing code and you become like a lead, and then when you've helped your teams write loads and loads of amazing code, you become the VP of engineering or the CTO or anything like that. But actually that's really not the way it works. There's definitely an inflection point in the career path where hopefully your company will support you becoming that great engineer if you want to be, but also gives the opportunity to kind of jump across to being a more project manager, tech lead, and people manager, and then grow from there. And yeah, certainly my career has been I've had a few opportunities to kind of that inflection point has existed for me, and I've generally always picked the people management direction rather than the kind of super talented engineer route. And I love hiring super talented engineers, but as I said, I'm not one myself. So
it's quite a conscious choice that you have to make. I still think it's we're seeing, I suppose, a progressive path towards alternative career paths, I suppose, to still climb the quote-unquote the ladder, you know, being able to kind of stay more technical or alternatively pursue like a leadership kind of role. Do you think that's, I mean, obviously I think the company has to be at a certain size in order for you to be able to do that, but assuming that companies are, do you think that it's becoming almost necessary to offer that in order to be able to attain the best talent?
Yes, yeah, definitely. I think even at our size at 30 people, we want to be able to offer people a variety of career paths, while still giving, you know, while still not shutting the door to changing those as well. But, you know, it's good to be able to say to people, yeah, you can go technically deep, you can go architecturally broad, or you can go into management.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I think it's a really interesting opportunity for people as well, who, like you say, aren't as technical but kind of love the technology side. And I think that's maybe what we're crying out for, because maybe it's a bad assumption to assume that everyone's going to be, you know, the way you are, Sam, you know, where you kind of really embrace the leadership role, like the recruiting side of it and all the rest of it. I would say typically that's not always going to be consistent with developers. So to assume that they will become that is wrong. You kind of seen it in product managers, you know, a lot of product managers are non-technical.
Yep.
but senior technical leadership doesn't seem to be all the way there yet. And I think it's important that those career options are there for people who, you know, just want to focus on that side as much as anything.
Yeah, and I think you're always going to hit. I mean, the one thing I would say is that engineers are always going to hit a ceiling if they can't build the more expansive soft skills that are required, even at the higher technical leadership level. So, you know, even CTOs, great CTOs who are not people managers, still need to be able to inspire people, motivate them. You know, really great architects are not the ones who come up with they're not always the ones who come up with the most innovatively incredible ideas, but they're the ones who can sell good ideas to other people in the team and inspire the team to kind of get behind them and deliver them. So there is a point, even when you're going down the technical path, that you still need to be able to interact with other people and motivate them to some extent. But yeah, what you don't need to do is you don't need to be doing approving people's holiday requests or whatever. I'm not implying that's just what my job is, but there's an element of people management in every senior technical position. But what there isn't is you don't need to be necessarily coaching or hiring or strategizing about the future direction of the engineering team, but you do need to be able to work with others. And yeah, if you can't do that, there's a very limited set of senior technical roles that are open up to you then. And I'm sure you find that when you're looking at it, it's a lot easier to find a really, if you've got someone who's very, very senior with lots of experience, if they're also a great people person, that, you know, that even if they're not going into a management role, that they can do very well. They can do much better in their career more widely as a technical person.
It's, I think it's an exciting position to be in, I think, personally, from, you know, people like yourself who are, you know, fully involved in engineering teams and the leadership side of things. I think, obviously, you know, it's technology is just exciting at the moment, all aspects of it. It's undeniable across business, regardless of what it is. It's a fascinating place to be in. So I think with that regard, it's quite easy to see how people are kind of motivated. But, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, from your perspective, what elements of the role and, you know, what role the product or the company that you're kind of representing plays on, you know, how motivated, you know, you might be and how motivated engineers and technical people are.
Well, ultimately, it is a combination of lots of those different things. I think speaking for Pusher specifically, so one of the really strong things about our business, and one of the ways we get direct applicants who are of a really, really high caliber, because we're already active in developer communities as a result of being a developer tools company. So, you know, people use our channels product and really enjoy using it and think, I would love to work for the company that's built this really cool product. And people who apply through that route, we've kind of already motivated them, because, you know, they actively enjoy using the products and they think, I'd really love to know how this works under the hood. And it's not like we keep that secret. We're kind of actually very public on our engineering blog and stuff like that about how our product works. And because actually the power of Pusher is not the technology underlying it, it's the way that we've set it up to take away the hassle of running it yourself. And so I think that's true for a lot of people. And we get so many applicants like that, and people, most of the people who we end up hiring are extremely familiar with Pusher before they even come through the first round of the interview process. So for us, that, you know, working on a really interesting high scalability product that has, you know, sends hundreds of billions of messages a month is a big motivator within itself just for the people we have in our team. I appreciate that's not the situation that most companies are in though. So, you know, I think we're very lucky in terms of our, the advantage that comes with some hiring, it is a really strong thing. More generally, yeah, I think, you know, you have to also be, if you are working with interesting cutting edge technology, that's also a benefit, but you have to somehow get people to understand that before or during the interview process, and ideally even before, so that when they come into that first stage, they're like, oh, I already know that your company uses great tech because I've read your engineering blog. Or but then there's companies who maybe can't offer either of those, so they don't necessarily offer an incredibly scalable challenge, and they don't offer a great tech stack, but you can still, even in those situations, you can still have a mission and you can still have opportunities for growing and things like that. And I feel that's what a lot of good engineers are looking for, regardless of their level.
Awesome, mate. I don't want to keep you too much longer as well. I know we're just over half an hour now, but to close things off, you know, For you, you know, for you personally, how have you kind of managed to keep that internal motivation to keep pushing and, you know, keep progressing and learning? Have you found it easy because it's something you've enjoyed throughout your career, or is there kind of a state of mind? Has there been anything that you'd kind of tell to maybe young people who were interested in pursuing a career similar to yours, and any couple of words of advice if you had any?
It's a difficult question, really. I think as for why I'm motivated and why I continue coming into work every day, part of it is that there's still things to do, and there's always going to be, you know, as we grow as a company, there's always going to be new opportunities for me and for me to give to people in the team. And, you know, our experience as a reasonably fast growing company has really been, that continually happens. So there's always new stuff, you know, the next week there's something else that, you know, someone needs to pick up and someone can use as a learning opportunity. And that, for me, it's kind of like competing against perfection. We talked about competition, and the ideal for me is unachievable in some ways, but the fun is getting there. So as long as you are enjoying the journey, then the end goal of perfection, it doesn't matter if you never reach it. Hopefully you're improving all the time, obviously, but that's sometimes harder to measure than, you know, what it's going to be like when you get there and it's all perfect. I think that's the one bit of advice I'd say to everyone, is like, enjoy the ride. Don't find the early part where, you know, there's problems at every single stage. So right at the beginning, at the early bit, there's the challenge of what are we actually going to do? Then you start delivering stuff, and then you suddenly realize that you can't do what you thought you were originally going to do, so you have to change. Then you get towards the end and it becomes more about a bit of a grind to actually get things optimized and then start making incremental improvements. But if you can enjoy the journey and learn along the way, then you're setting yourself up very well for your later career. And I feel like that's what I've done, hopefully, but you know, time will tell whether I ever get to that point of perfection.
Well, like so, mate, maybe the perfection is just enjoying the journey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So as long as you've done that, I think you nailed it. Great words of advice, Sam, mate. We'll leave it here for now, mate. Thank you so much for taking the time. Cheers. You know, really appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.